The Federal Reserve is gearing up to do aggressive interest rate cuts at the end of 2025. There's now 98% odds of an interest rate cut in October and December. In addition, they've indicated that they might start printing money again soon. And if they do these things, what's going to happen to the housing market? What's going to happen to the economy? And what's going to happen to your wallet? I'm going to cover all of that in today's video so you can understand what this Fed policy is going to mean for your finances. And the first thing we need to understand is the direction of the federal funds rate, the interest rate the Fed controls. It peaked at 5.3% in August 2024, and the Fed did about four interest rate cuts last year. They then held interest rates for 9 months, and they did one interest rate cut last month. Now they're projected to do another interest rate cut in October, and by this time in 2026, they're projected to do another four cuts after that. So we could have a 2.8% Fed funds rate by September 2026. And of course, if that happens, everyone, there'll be some downward pressure on long-term interest rates. There'll be some downward pressure on mortgage rates. The good news with these projections on the Fed interest rate cuts that come from the CME Fed Watch tool is that it should lower borrowing costs for you guys as home buyers. However, Reventure is estimating that mortgage rates are going to go to about 5.5% by the fall of next year. So we'll see a modest improvement from today's 6.2% mortgage rate, but don't expect mortgage rates back into the 3 or 4% range anytime soon. However, the more interesting thing about what the Fed is doing with their monetary policy right now is what they're saying about money printing, quantitative easing, and quantitative tightening. Because the Fed has two ways of controlling monetary policy that you need to pay attention to. Number one is interest rates. Number two is quantitative easing and quantitative tightening. And they just made a big announcement here on quantitative easing and quantitative tightening. They're saying that their tightening program could end soon. So since the middle of 2022, the Fed has been destroying money. A lot of people don't know that. Their balance sheet ballooned during the pandemic, but since the middle of 2022, they've been destroying money. And now Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said that the central bank is nearing a point where it will stop reducing the size of its bond holdings. But he gave no long-run indication of where interest rates are heading. However, the market knows where rates are heading. They're heading down. And this is super important to understand because the Fed printed a lot of money during the pandemic. Their balance sheet went from about 4 trillion prior to the pandemic to 9 trillion at the peak. This graph is showing that in a span of about 2 years, the Fed printed $5 trillion that monetized our debt. They bought government bonds. They bought mortgages. This helped create the great inflation, the great asset bubble that we're still in right now. However, since the middle of 2022, look at what's happened to the Fed balance sheet. It's been incrementally going down. And actually, the Fed balance sheet's fallen to 6.6 trillion. So it's gone down by 2.4 trillion due to this tightening program, which is good. The Fed has been shedding assets. They've been actually destroying some of the money they created. However, now they're saying they're going to stop this program of tightening and kind of maybe go more into a program of stability. And some people think actually that what the Fed might start doing soon again is printing money again through quantitative easing. And Jerome Powell, to be clear, hasn't said that, but a lot of people are now speculating that with how high the US government debt is getting, US government debt is now like 36, 37 trillion. Our fiscal deficit is 6% of GDP. Some are suspecting that the Fed will begin monetizing our debt again and buying treasuries to help keep long-term interest rate costs lower. And if that happens, everyone, and I'm not saying it will, but if that happens as a next step, it's something that could reignite inflation expectations in 2026, because the Fed folks, they really caused that inflation in 2022 and 2023 to get out of control by what they were doing. They've stopped it, which has helped the inflation get lower. But if they start it again, we all got to watch out. Maybe there could be a reignition of inflation. However, I think the interesting thing right now, everyone, is that inflation is actually starting to come down. Oil prices, for instance, everyone, oil prices are down 5% in the last month. They're down 17% in the last year. Crude barrel of oil is now $59 a barrel. Oil prices are starting to go down. They're actually now back down below where they were prior to the pandemic in 2018, 2019, and well below where they were in 2013 on this 10-year graph. So oil prices are coming down. In addition, folks, another interesting thing is happening related to rents. Folks, rents in America are also starting to go down. According to RealPage, apartment demand slowed in the third quarter, leading to uncommon third quarter rent cuts. Now, this is really interesting in the discussion of inflation and the economy and where the housing market's heading. What's going on with rent? Well, RealPage, they're a big apartment data aggregator. They're showing that we had a 0.3% rent cut in the third quarter, which they're saying is very rare. The third quarter usually does much better. But there was sluggish leasing activity behind a weaker than expected third quarter. Year-over-year rent growth is now going down, and RealPage is showing that in some markets like Denver, Austin, Phoenix, San Antonio, Vegas, Orlando, Dallas, Nashville, rents are going down by quite a bit year-over-year. And why this is important is because if rents are now going to go down on a national basis, that's a disinflationary force in the economy. That might even be a deflationary force in the economy if rents are going down for apartments, and in some markets are going down 4, 5, 6, 7% year over year. Those are big rent cuts, right? That's saying there's a lot of apartment supply on the market, a lot of vacant apartment units. They're just not finding the renters there. And so that's something that could pull inflation down into 2026. There's about one third of the inflation calculation in the BLS CPI is rent. So if rent continues to disinflate and trend negative, we could see inflation trend negative or disinflate in 2026. And so that's an interesting thing to understand. A lot of people are talking about the inflationary impacts of our deficit, the inflationary impacts of, dollar demonetization, and the potential inflationary impacts of Fed rate cuts, right? A lot of people are talking about that, like we might have a big surge in inflation. But the rental market is disinflating, even deflating, and then oil prices are going down. Rental market, oil prices, that's about 40 to 45% of the CPI calculation right there. And both of them are going down by quite a bit, which leads me to believe that we're going to see further overall housing market deflation in 2025. Rents go down, that makes it more likely that home prices are go down. And I'm actually on a live stream right now, everyone. It's October 22nd, Wednesday, coming to you live here from the ReVenture offices in New York. And I'll be taking your requests as this video goes on. We're going to look at different housing markets, talk about what these Fed rate cuts might mean for different housing markets around the US. And of course, a lot of people in real estate believe that these Fed rate cuts are going to save the day. And we've seen this the last couple of years, right? A lot of people in real estate get excited when the Fed cuts rates. They get out there and they say, "Oh my gosh, well, the Fed's gonna cut, and then the buyers are gonna come out of the woodwork and the demand is gonna soar." But what's really interesting, folks, is we can do some analysis and ask ourselves the question, do we think that these Fed interest rate cuts that are coming, 98% odds of a Fed rate cut coming in 1 week in late October? Do we think that that's going to bring buyer demand back into the market? And how low is buyer demand today, actually fundamentally? And how much will that buyer demand need to increase before we see home prices go back up? Because again, a lot of people think Fed rate cuts automatically mean prices are going to go up. But that relationship isn't exactly what you think it is. And let's dig into some of the numbers on this. This is important for you guys to understand what's going on here with housing market demand. Right now, what's going on here with housing market demand as far as Fed rate cuts? And what we're looking at here on this graph, everyone, is mortgage applications to buy a house. Mortgage applications to buy a house. This is a weekly data point. People going out to their mortgage broker, their mortgage lender, and basically, applying for a mortgage to buy a house. Mortgage applications to buy a house. And you can see here, as I just adjust this graph for you all, that the current mortgage application index just came in this week is a 157. So this is where we are on mortgage demand to purchase this week, 157 entering late October. Now, you can see that's way down from the pandemic peak of 348, an index of 348. It's also way down from pre-pandemic norms. And the 10-year norm on mortgage applications to purchase is 233. This is data from the Mortgage Bankers Association, again, everyone, measuring the number of people each week applying for a mortgage to buy a house. So you can see the current mortgage application demand, it has improved from a year ago, but we're still about 30 to 35% below the 10-year norm. And to be this far below the 10-year norm on mortgage applications to buy a house suggests that home buyers are not very responsive so far to the rate cuts that have occurred. So 5 rate cuts have already occurred in the last 15 months. We've had 5 rate cuts already, just so you guys understand where we are in this Fed rate cut cycle. We were at a 5.3% Fed funds rate, August 2024. Then we went down to a 4.3% Fed funds rate a year ago. Then the Fed held steady. Then they cut in September. They're going to cut again in October to 3.8%. So we've already had quite a bit of Fed rate cuts, and we have some more Fed rate cuts coming over the next year. But for this, basically the first half of rate cuts, there's been almost no improvement in buyer demand. Really, almost no improvement in mortgage applications to buy a house. And you say to yourself, why is this? Why are the home buyers not really responding to the rate cuts? Everyone in real estate thought that the home buyers would respond to the rate cuts. But take a look at this, everyone. This week's mortgage application purchase index of 157. The good news for the real estate market, it's up 20% from the last 2 years in October for the same time frame. So that's good. We're out of the basement, right? On people going to buy a house with a mortgage. We're out of the basement. But we're down 40% from 2021, 48% from 2020, 35% from 2019, and 31% from 2018 for the same week. So the overall fundamental demand levels to apply for a mortgage and buy a house are still really, really weak, and they have not really been responsive to rate cuts yet. And the reason I'm spending so much time in explaining this for you guys as potential buyers and investors is so you have an accurate understanding of where the market is today. I suspect we're going to see over the next couple months, we're going to see a new narrative push about how you need to buy a house now because the Fed's cutting rates. I think we're going to see a bunch of people on social media get out there and say that. They're going to try to FOMO you into buying a house before the end of this year, maybe in early 2026 due to these Fed rate cuts. And I'm not saying you shouldn't buy, but just understand that rate cuts in and of themselves are not a reason to run out and buy a house. Thus far, we've had 5 rate cuts, no meaningful increase in demand, and that, in fact, pending home sales, according to Redfin in September and October, are below where they were last year. So that's where we are kind of on the chessboard of the housing market. The question is, what's going on in your market? You know, when we looked at this rent cut data from RealPage earlier, we're seeing big rent cuts in certain markets. Denver rents are down 7.7% year over year. Austin rents are down 7.5%. Phoenix is down 5.3%. Comparatively, though, rents in San Francisco are up 7%. Rents in Chicago are up 4.5%. Rents in New York are up 3.3%. So we have this bifurcated rental market, and this bifurcated rental market is also flowing through to the overall housing market. And so this is really the fascinating thing about this market. This is not really a national market right now. It's a bifurcated market. And interestingly, these areas where rents are declining, like Denver, well, lo and behold, home values are also declining in Denver. Rents in Denver are down 7%, while data on Reventure app shows that home values are down 2.9% year over year. There's a strong relationship between the rental market and the for sale market. Rents in Austin are down 7% year over year. Well, their home values are also down 5.9% year over year, according to data on Reventure app. So folks, this is really interesting. We're seeing this interesting relationship between rents and home values. Why are the markets with the biggest rent cuts also the ones where home values are going down? I mean, we could look at this list. Phoenix rents are down 5.3%. According to data on Reventure app, home values are down 3.6%. And these are different data sources. Apartment rents come from RealPage. Home values come from Zillow. They're showing a very consistent relationship. San Antonio, rents down 4.9%. Home values down 3.1%. And of course, it works on the other way too. Chicago, rents up 4.5%. Home values up 3.4%. So if you guys want to understand kind of the fundamentals of your market, for buying a house, where our home value is heading, understanding where rents are heading is actually a really important piece to that. And I'm going to talk a bit more in this video about how you can actually use the rental rate data from sources like RealPage, as well as the rental rate data we have on ReVenture app, to help you understand what's going on in your market. But I think what's really fascinating is to look at the forecast, right? Where are prices heading in your area in the next year? So I just flipped it here to home price forecast on ReVenture app. And these areas in blue have the biggest downward forecast. So you can see we have negative downward forecasts now for about, I would say, three-fifths of the US now. ReVenture app is forecasting downward prices over the next year for about three-fifths of the US. These areas in red here in the Midwest and Northeast still have upward forecasts. And actually, where I am right now in Albany, New York, folks, this is a market here, Albany, New York, which is surprisingly hot. I mean, I don't know if you guys know much about Albany, and I'm going to talk about some maybe smaller markets in this video. It's about 2 hours north of New York City. It's the state capital. We here at ReVenture have a plus 6.1% forecast for Albany, New York over the next 12 months. This is still a seller's market. This has not turned into a buyer's market yet. And I was actually looking at some houses here in Albany on the market for sale, and it's actually crazy how affordable some of these houses are. And for some of you out there looking to buy now, maybe you're an investor, maybe you're looking to buy for cash flow. This is actually kind of interesting, everyone. Zillow recently is blocking me from using their website. Zillow seems to think I'm a bot. See, press and hold to confirm you are a human and not a bot. I press and hold, and then nothing happens. You guys can let me know if this has happened to you when you've used Zillow before. But I'm going to use Redfin now, since Zillow isn't loading for me. Let's take a look at some listings in different markets. And what I'm looking for in this market right now, everyone's affordability, right? If I'm buying, especially as a first-time buyer or investor, I am looking for affordability. I want to buy a house where the mortgage payment is less than the rent. Right? That to me would be a signal of like, all right, this could be a good idea to buy if the mortgage payment is less than the rent. And I was actually looking at this house in Albany the other day. You guys can let me know what you think about it. It's a 3-bed, 2-bath, 1,100 square foot, 2-unit. So this is 2 units, 2 1-bedroom units on the market for $197,000. 197. You can see it's actually pretty nice. This is an old building. It's built like in the 1800s. If you buy in the Northeast, you buy in the Midwest and some of these older towns, you're gonna buy some buildings that were built like over 100 years ago. There might be some hidden things behind the walls you have to be careful of, but you can see this is a livable unit. Your mortgage here would be $1,200 a month if you were to buy this townhouse, split townhouse for $197,000. Your mortgage would be $1,200 a month. I was looking on Zillow the other day. The rental estimate was around $1,900 a month. So you could basically make $600, $700 a month on your payment by buying this cheaper townhome in Albany. Now, I'm not saying you should necessarily run out and do this. What I am saying, though, is there's certain markets that still have a decent amount of affordability, where ReVenture is still forecasting that prices are going to go up by quite a bit in the next year. These markets are really concentrated in the Northeast. In Midwest, Chicago, it's a market that a lot of people, don't like for a variety of reasons. But if you actually look in Chicago, it's actually crazy in Chicago how much we have positive forecasts for a lot of these different zip codes. Like in some of these northern suburbs in Chicago, these wealthier northern suburbs, we have a 10%, 10% forecast, plus 10% forecast for the next 12 months in Winnetka, Illinois, right? So this just shows the importance of looking at this forecast for your area, for your city, so you can understand where the market's heading in the future. Because if you're in Winnetka, a nice suburb north of Chicago, looking to buy a house, you should not wait a year. Waiting a year in Winnetka is just going to mean the prices are going to be higher a year from now. And that has nothing to do with Fed rate cuts. That just has to do with the inventory and demand dynamics in all of these different markets. But I think, the Fed obviously has a big influence on the economy. We would be foolish to say that the Fed doesn't have any influence. And I think the interesting thing about what the Fed has been doing so far, and you guys can let me know what you think about what the Fed's been doing with their rate cuts, is we've had the 5 rate cuts already, and there's been almost no positive response in home buyer demand. Now, that has shocked a lot of people in the real estate industry. How come 5 rate cuts in this cycle, soon to be a 6th rate cut next week, how come buyer demand hasn't come back? And when will this buyer demand come back? And I think what some people are now learning in the housing market is that it's not so much about interest rates. It's not so much about mortgage rates even. It's about prices. The prices went up about 40-50% in the US the last 5 years. The mortgage rates doubled, yes, but it was the prices that went up by even more. And when the prices go up 40-50%, I think a lot of home buyers, a lot of investors, they kind of just check out. You know, they look at some of these listings on Redfin or Zillow and they say, "Hey, that house is not worth 600,000, it's worth 400,000. Or that house is not worth 400,000, it's worth 300,000." And they're just not willing to, you know, budge or get into the market on that. And I think that's just where a lot of home buyers are right now. They're fatigued with the market. They're fatigued with high prices. They're upset that sellers, despite now dropping prices in half the US, they're upset that sellers are still clutching to really unrealistic list prices in many markets. And so it's the prices being high that's keeping the demand low, which suggests that more Fed interest rate cuts might be somewhat pushing on a string in terms of restimulating this market. Like, okay, the Fed cutting from 4 to 3.8, then to 3.6%. How much is that going to really bring buyers back in? Right? I mean, is that getting you guys excited? Is the Fed cutting from 3.8 to 3.5? Or for 4.1 to 3.8, is that getting you excited, like out there to buy a house? No, I don't think so. I think the only people that's really getting excited are, you know, the people in the cottage real estate industry. Mortgage brokers and realtors, I think, are really hoping for a turnaround from these Fed interest rate cuts. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see a massive spike in demand. We haven't seen it already. Maybe we'll see incrementally higher demand, a little bit more mortgage applications, a little bit more home sales. But until the home prices come back down to a more normal level, we are just not going to see a booming housing market again. We have to see those prices come back down. And ultimately, if you're in a real estate industry, I think get on board with that idea. That's what home buyers want to see. Lower prices, that's ultimately going to help effectuate transactions. And I'm going to cover some of the markets here right now where prices are going down and where we're forecasting prices to go down. So we're talking here on ReVenture app. At www.reventure.app, you guys should go and use this application so you can make a more informed decision buying a house or investment property. You can see we have a positive 5.7% forecast in Chicago going forward. Now, how do we come up with that forecast? Well, it has different components. We have a recent appreciation score, we have a days on market score, we have a mortgage rate score, so we do have a component related to mortgage rates, inventory, and price cuts. So we look at the supply and demand fundamentals in the market to come up with our forecast. Chicago, we have a plus 5.7%. But if we head down to Nashville, folks, we have a minus 6% forecast in Nashville. So a lot of regional variation, minus 6% in Nashville, plus 6% in Chicago. You know, if you were to talk to the average person, they'd probably have it flipped. They would think Chicago would go down 6%, Nashville would go up 6%, but that's not the case because Nashville has flipped into a heavy buyer's market. And the reason we know that is because of inventory. The inventory in Nashville is through the roof. There's almost 11,000 homes on the market. We're also seeing homes sit on the market now in Nashville for 60 days in September. Normally, it's 38 days in September. So when you see the DOM go up that much, that's telling you there's a big, big slowdown. Now, in comparison, in Chicago, the DOM is only 38 days. And you can see the DOM is way down from where it was before the pandemic. So this is just how actually, folks, you guys as buyers and investors, you could use this data to really fundamentally understand what's going on in your area. And you could use this data to make more informed offers, better offers on houses. You can see some other cities where we have downward forecast here. If we look at our home price forecast and ReVenture app, you know, Dallas, Texas, this is a big one. Dallas, we have a minus 6.7% forecast. So we got minus 6.7% in Dallas. If we head to Florida, you can see we have negative forecasts all over Florida for the next year. Florida is already dropping, by the way. Florida's prices are dropping pretty much everywhere, as they are in most of these Sun Belt markets already. These values are already declining, according to data from Zillow available on ReVenture app. We suspect with this forecast, they're going to continue. But folks, take a look at this. There's still variation by zip code. So, like, if I zoom in on Dallas, you can actually see we have some neighborhoods north of Dallas, Highland Park, plus 5% forecast in the next 12 months. Downtown Dallas -8.4%. So if you're a serious home buyer, if you're a serious investor, you got to dig into this zip code level data so you can understand the houses in your zip code that you're looking at buying. Are they going to appreciate? Are they going to depreciate in the next year? That's going to help you a lot in terms of helping you decide when and where to buy a house and how much to offer on the house. But I think one thing that's also interesting about the Fed is the quantitative tightening and the fact that they're stopping the quantitative tightening. And I want to spend a little time now explaining to you all what this means, right? Because I think it's kind of an obtuse topic, like money printing, quantitative easing, quantitative tightening. What does it all mean? Well, the first thing to understand is that quantitative easing is money printing. So when people say money printing, or the Fed's going to print money again, it means that they're saying the Fed's going to go back to quantitative easing. Now, what is quantitative easing? What is quantitative easing? And why should you care about it? And are we going to see it happen again? So, according to Google Gemini, quantitative easing is a monetary policy where a central bank buys assets, injecting money into the economy to lower interest rates and stimulate borrowing and spending. In contrast, quantitative tightening is the opposite. A central bank reduces its balance sheet by selling assets and letting them mature without reinvestment, which decreases the money supply, raises interest rates, and cools down the economy. Now, the Fed has been doing quantitative tightening the last 3 years. So the Fed has been basically taking money out of the system the last 3 years through quantitative tightening. And again, not a lot of people know that, but the Fed has been doing that. Now they're saying we're not going to do quantitative tightening anymore. So they're going to stop the balance sheet roll off and they're going to hold their balance sheet stable. And the reason that I believe they're doing this, everyone, is because if you look at the Fed's asset to GDP ratio, you could see Fed assets on their balance sheet, third quarter 2025, are 6.6 trillion on a 30.8 trillion GDP. That's 22%. So the Fed basically has monetized 22% of this economy through its assets. At the peak of the pandemic, the Fed assets were 35% of GDP. So again, this was like the rampant inflation period, right? Since then, the economy has outgrown Fed assets. And now, pretty close, the Fed assets to GDP are getting back to the average it was at in 2012, 2013, 2014. And this is ultimately why I believe they're now thinking of stopping quantitative tightening. Because once they get below this dotted line here, maybe some bad things could start happening in the economy. They got below this dotted line in 2019 and they had some issues. They had issues in the short-term repo market, short-term interest rates spiked. The Fed had to kind of rush to back to printing money after that. They don't want to have to print money again. So I think that's why they're kind of anticipating that they're going to need to slow down and basically lower their quantitative tightening. But you know what's really interesting, everyone, is like what the Fed's balance sheet actually looks like. So when you look at the long term, you know, if you ask yourselves the question here, and I just want to make sure you all understand this, you know, what does the Fed actually do when they print money? You know, what does this even mean? Like the dynamics of them printing money, like how does this actually happen and why should you care about it? So just let's take a look at this. I built this little chart for you guys to kind of help you all understand it, help me understand it as well. So the Fed has assets and liabilities. Now, their assets include 4.2 trillion in treasuries. So they've bought 4.2 trillion of US government treasuries. So when you hear people say Fed monetizing the debt, what they do is they print money and then buy actual government bonds. So the US government will issue bonds and the Fed will buy them. It will print money to buy them. So they've done that for 4.2 trillion of US treasuries. They also did 2.1 trillion of mortgages. 2.1 trillion of mortgages. And they have about 0.3 trillion of other assets. So this is the Fed money printing that they've done to date has all been through buying US treasuries and US mortgages. Like mortgage, they bought something like 90% of the mortgages during the pandemic. Now, then how does that money actually make its way into circulation? Well, it makes its way into currency. So the liabilities on the Fed balance sheet include 2.4 trillion in currency. So that's like just the currency in circulation. There's $2.4 trillion of cash. There's 3 trillion in bank reserves, 3 trillion in bank reserves, which is basically money that banks have that they park at the Fed. Then there's what's called the US Treasury General Account, about $1 trillion the government parks with the Fed. And there's about $0.3 trillion in reverse repo agreements. And so this is kind of how the inflation is created. It finds its way into currency, finds its way into bank balance sheets, finds its way into the government balance sheet. And what's really interesting is if you look at the era before, if you look at the era before 2008, 93% of the Fed's liabilities were currency in circulation. Currency in circulation was 93% of the Fed's liabilities, meaning that all the money printing the Fed really did was they basically bought enough treasuries to keep up the currency in circulation, is what they did prior to the pandemic. So any money printing back then was simply kind of like grow the currency in circulation at a consistent rate, right? That's it. But then that changed in 2008. All of a sudden, currency in circulation dropped to like 35% of the Fed's liabilities, whereas bank reserves grew to 60% and are around 45% today. So all of a sudden, the Fed, instead of just printing money to put currency in circulation at just a regular interval, they printed money to then put all this money on bank balance sheets that the bank then parks at the Fed. And all this money on bank balance sheets at that they park at the Fed, banks then theoretically feel more comfortable in lending and pushing money out into the economy if they have all this money at the Fed. In addition, for a short period during the pandemic, we had a big spike in repos. That's just like another liability account at the Fed where banks can park money. And then we have the Treasury General Account around 10%. So this is also just interesting to see how the Fed's balance sheet has changed. Liabilities used to just only be currency in circulation. Now the biggest liability is bank reserves. And the reason why the Fed is thinking about doing stopping quantitative tightening is the bank reserves are actually dropping. The bank reserves just dropped below 3 trillion. And so there's some level of bank reserves that the Fed doesn't want to go below because they're fearful that if we go below a certain level of bank reserves, there could be some problems in the lending market. Maybe there could be some runs on banks if we go below a certain level of bank reserves. So the Fed is getting skittish now. We're kind of getting to a level where the money in the repo account is run out. The bank reserves are dropping. It's a signal that kind of like the free money in the economy has kind of gone away. So the Fed's saying, okay, we need to stop quantitative tightening. And some people are now thinking, oh, they're going to start quantitative easing soon. One big thing to obviously think about is that in May 2026, Trump is going to get to select his next Fed chair. So Powell's term expires on May 2026. So it's very likely that we're going to have a new Fed chair after May 2026 that is going to be picked by Trump. And will, of course, have to be approved by the Senate, but we're probably going to get a Fed chair next spring that's more agreeable to easing, right? Trump has made no, has made no disguise about wanting interest rates cut by a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some monetization of the debt that happens under Trump. I'm not saying it's going to happen for sure, but the odds will probably go up after Powell leaves that someone is installed in there who's more likely to do it. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope the Fed never goes back to doing quantitative easing. It's something they never did before 2008, really, in a widespread scale. And then after 2008, they did it in response to that crash, and they did it in response to the pandemic. And so, what's that going to do in 2026? Like, the Fed policy is going to get easier. Maybe they'll cut interest rates down to like 2.8% on the Fed funds, 5.5% mortgage rate. Will they reinstitute quantitative easing as well? We don't know. But I think for you guys as home buyers and investors, who are maybe concerned about the value of your dollar, right? Who are concerned about inflation. I think it's important to focus on the hard inflation numbers, right? Focus on the rent growth. Focus on the wage growth. Like if you're truly concerned that the value of the dollar in your bank account is going to get erased in the next couple of years, look at rent. I mean, we're not going to see any type of crazy inflation in the US without rental rates surging. Rental rates surging is ultimately what causes, like a significant amount of inflation. Like if we go back and look through history here, and let's see if I can find this graph here, comparing. Yeah, so here we're comparing two things. The orange line here, I'm actually just going to focus on the orange line on its own. because I think you guys got to pay attention to the rents. So this line here is rent growth in the CPI. This is the rent growth calculated by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And why the inflation was so bad in the 70s, right, and into the 80s was we had some crazy rent growth. We had rent growth of 9% a year for a couple years in the early 1980s. And this is one of the big fundamental things that drove that inflation in the 70s was rents getting more expensive. You can then see what drove the inflation of the pandemic. Rents. Rent growth hit 8.8% a year in 2023. Now, the BLS CPI rents have dropped down to 3.3%. Higher than the rents reported by RealPage and the rents reported by John Burns. So one thing about this BLS rental data is it lags. So you can see a heavy deceleration in rent growth to 3.5%. But the current rent growth is likely even lower than that, because if we were to just take a look at like single family, for instance, single family rents. According to the Wall Street Journal, they quoted data from John Burns Consulting. And they showed that rent growth for single-family homes in 2025 through July was the sixth lowest level in the last 40 years, 1.5%. So the more real-time rental statistics are dropping even faster than the Bureau of Labor Statistics CPI rent. And what that is signaling is, like, again, a big slowdown in rental rate growth. And if there's a slowdown in rental rate growth or deflation in rents, we are not going to see any type of mass inflation in general. You cannot have mass inflation without rents going up. So I would really kind of anchor yourself in this statistic. What's the single family rent growth? What's the apartment rent growth in my market, for the US overall? If we're seeing apartment demand slowing and uncommon rent cuts in the apartment market, with quarter over quarter rents dropping, year over year rents dropping, it's a signal to you that maybe sometime in the future, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, maybe sometime in the future, year and a half from now, we could see a revival in inflation. We are not seeing it yet, though. And if you are planning on buying a house in the next 6 to 12 months, this real-time data is what matters more for you. Where are the rents going in your market? And then what's the reventure forecast for your market over the next 12 months? These are much more meaningful than speculation about Fed rate cuts, speculation about mortgage rates, because we already have a lot of real-time supply and demand fundamentals to go off of in these different markets. And we got some comments coming through here now in the chat. This is a members-only live stream chat. Occasionally I'll do members only live stream chat. Normally we have everyone who's a subscriber being able to chat, but today it's just channel members. So we have a couple interesting questions here. One is, why do they have to print money if it's already parked at the Fed? Why do they have to print money if it's already parked at the Fed? So to be clear, it's a good question. To be clear, in the last 3 years, they haven't been printing money. They've been taking money away, which is why the Fed balance sheet has contracted the last 3 years by about $2.5 trillion. So the last 3 years, they've been taking it away. But during the pandemic, they printed $5 trillion. So they printed $5 trillion during the pandemic because, they were freaking out about, lockdowns and there being a worldwide depression. And so they printed all this money during the pandemic, in response to that. And I was an overreaction for sure. I mean, right? Like, I don't think that's controversial to say, because I think your point is, well, there was already a decent amount of bank reserves on the balance sheet. Why didn't these banks just lend it out? That's a whole other discussion, actually. Like, bank reserves have already been high now for a couple years, like for like a decade plus. Why aren't the banks just lending it out? We're getting into some convoluted things here, but one reason why, folks, is the US eliminated reserve requirements for all depository institutions in March 2020. Not a lot of people know this. So we used to have what's called a fractional reserve banking system, meaning that banks had to hold a certain percentage of reserves on their balance sheet. I think it was around 10%. Banks had to hold 10% of reserves on their balance sheet. They don't have to do that anymore. The reason why is because the Fed, because they printed so much money, they've now moved to an ample reserves framework, which relies on other tools like interest on reserves to manage the money supply. So the idea is, since the There's so many bank reserves now, like $3 trillion in bank reserves. The idea is like, oh, we don't need to mandate that each depository institution hold 10% because we at the Fed, well, these banks have like $3 trillion parked with us at the Fed. So they're just going to take the money from there if they run into issues. So this is like a sneaky thing the Fed did during the pandemic, eliminating reserve requirements. Not a huge fan of this. I feel like they should probably reinstitute reserve requirements. I mean, we had them for a long time. Banks had to hold a certain percentage on their balance sheet. Now they're holding it at the Fed. This is probably one reason why the Fed is kind of skittish because this has never really been tested before. Like, oh, there's some level. I just want to explain this to all of you. Reserves depository institutions. This is going to help explain again why is the Fed ending quantitative tightening? So, can we get this weekly? Reserves weekly. All right, so this is monthly. So this is not exactly what we want, but this is the amount of money that banks have parked at the Fed, right? It was 2.3 trillion prior to the pandemic. It ran down kind of low in 2019, which triggered some issues, right? Then the Fed printed all this money, bank reserves spiked. They've since gone down. In the last couple of months, they've actually dipped below 3 trillion. And there's this idea that there's some amount of bank reserves that we don't want to go below. Because if you go below this theoretical limit on bank reserves, there could be problems. And the Fed doesn't, no one really knows. Apparently it's like 2.7, 2.8 trillion, but no one really knows for sure, which is why the Fed is starting to just get skittish and they want to get ahead of it. All right. Some other questions here. Do you still anticipate two more BIP cuts? Yes, we do here at ReVentureApp. So I want to again show you guys what are we forecasting here with the Fed interest rate policy. So at ReVentureApp, we are forecasting that by the end of the year, the Fed cuts rates from 4.1 to 3.6. So this will be 2/4 point cuts by the end of the year by December. The current betting markets then say the Fed's going to cut three more times through 2026 down to 2.8% Fed funds rate. So in all, folks, if these are the current projections of the betting markets, of the prediction markets, I should say, the FOMC Fed Watch Tool. If this happens, if we're at a 2.8% Fed funds rate by 2026, that would basically be the order of 10 rate cuts in this cycle. And we're about to be halfway into that. We're about halfway into the rate cut cycle already. So again, important to understand, a lot of people are talking about like future rate cuts. We've already done about half the rate cuts based on what the betting markets are saying. Many markets think it's going to stabilize around 2.8. And 2.8 Fed funds, we think that's going to associate with about a 5.5% mortgage rate. 5.5% mortgage rate, we think, is going to be the association with a 2.8% Fed funds. So maybe we have mortgage rates at the mid 5% range by the middle of 2026. You can see that's obviously been an improvement from where they were earlier this year and last year, but I don't think it's going to be enough to bring a flood of buyers into the market. I think instead we're going to see more sellers come to the market. In fact, this is something that already is starting to happen, talked about in some previous videos. Another comment here. As an investor, I don't care if rent increases. I care if I have a tenant and profit on the mortgage rate. That's interesting. So you're saying as an investor, you want to make sure you're profitable from day one. That makes sense, right? You're profitable from day one. You're requesting I show the graph on cap rate versus mortgages. Let's see if I can find that graph for you guys. This is, by the way, this is like my big ultra graph file. I have literally hundreds of graphs here in this file. So this is one interesting one. Cap rates versus treasuries. Here's the blue line's the cap rate. The yellow line's the 10-year treasury, right? We're basically seeing cap rates right around the 10-year treasury, meaning that there's not much of a financial incentive to buy real estate. You could just invest in a government bond. The other more interesting one was the mortgage rate versus cap rate. Let's see if I can find that for you guys. Mortgage rate versus cap rate. Here we go. Let's see here. I think this is a little outdated. Let me see if I can get a more recent one for you all. Let's see here. So this is a little outdated, but I think it tells the story, right? The blue line's the cap rate, which is the profit on buying a rental, right? On average, it's around 5% profit on buying a rental right now. The mortgage rate as of July was 6.7. Now it's 6.2. Well above the cap rate, meaning if you buy an investment property with a mortgage just on a national basis, you are going to lose money most likely. And this is why I was talking earlier about markets that you could buy today where you won't lose money. What are some markets, if we just go to Reventure app here, click Metro, and then go to investor metrics and look at cap rates, what are some markets with higher cap rates where you can actually earn a solid return? This is a key data point for you to look at on Reventure app if you're an investor, is the cap rate data. What are the markets with the highest and lowest cap rates? It's really important for you guys to understand this cap rate data because it's going to help you find areas as an investor that have better returns. Like if we go to Tampa, for instance, and look at cap rate by zip code, you can see big differences also by zip code. There's some areas in Tampa, your cap rate's at 2.5% here in Hyde Park, this nice neighborhood to the west of downtown Tampa. You're not going to make any money on this. You're not going to make any profit, right? 2.5%, the 10-year treasury yield's 4.1%, right? Like, if you're interested in cash flow, do not buy an investment property here in this type of neighborhood where the cap rate's 2.5%. We actually have this cool feature here where you can compare it to the 10-year treasury yield. So compare the cap rate to the 10-year treasury to get a sense of when and when it's not a good time to buy as an investor in different markets. You can see here, actually, we have an area of 14% cap rate here north of St. Petersburg. If you see a double-digit cap rate, that could be a good area to target. You go here to the filters tab, you add cap rate, and then you go to, let's just say 10%. I only want to look at markets with over 10% cap rate. You can see we only have one in Tampa. That's rough. Do we have any in Orlando over 10% cap rate? Let's see. We go to filters, 10% cap rate. Let's do a little reset here. Let's do a 10% cap rate on the filters. If you guys haven't used the filters tool on Reventure app, I would highly recommend that you use it. It's really helpful to actually isolate areas that best fit your criteria. You can see no zip codes with a 10% cap rate in Orlando. So this is the issue, right? In a lot of different markets, it's just not profitable to buy real estate right now. Orlando has a 5.6% cap rate overall. And again, these Fed rate cuts, they might help you a little bit, on your borrowing costs. Mortgage rates might tick down a bit in the next 6 months. Maybe they get into the 5% range. They're 6.17% today. But, you're going to be wanting to target higher cap rate markets, higher cap rate areas if you're an investor. You can see here, like the Mountain West down to California, really low cap rates. Now, one thing people say to me in response to my analysis of cap rates, I see a lot of people say, "Oh, I'm buy for appreciation." Some people buy for appreciation is what they say. And so they don't care as much about cash flow. And it's true that there's certain areas that will appreciate more in the long run from a real estate perspective. Often, sometimes higher cap rate areas have lower long-term appreciation, which is why the cap rate's higher. However, here's the issue, folks. You should not be banking on significant appreciation buying in this market in late 2025. Maybe if you're buying north of Chicago, maybe if you're buying in the suburbs around New York City, you can bank on some appreciation because those markets are still hot. But in most other areas, you should be betting that the value of your house is going to go down or stay stable after you buy. So I wouldn't be banking on appreciation buying in this market. I think that's a mistake. If you're buying a house or an investment property thinking, "Oh, I'm just going to gain equity by buying," well, to gain equity, you actually have to see appreciation. That's the only way you gain equity, if there's appreciation in the market. And we're in a situation right now where the US housing market is about 20% overvalued. And if we're 20% overvalued, a lot of different areas are going to struggle to have appreciation in the long run. So I think it's just really important to think in those terms, right? Like, why am I buying a house? Why am I buying an investment property? What are my goals? Are my goals cash flow? If so, let's target high cash flow areas and hope that the Fed rate cuts lower the mortgage costs. Am I targeting appreciation? Well, you better be very careful. You better do your research. Look at that Reventure 12-month forecast for your area to see what the appreciation is going to look like before you do. All right, what other comments do we have from you guys here? Ideally, we need rates to drop. What percent to bring more buyers to the market? Ideally, we need rates to drop. What percent to bring more buyers to the market? Well, I mean, look, I just showed you guys my analysis. The Fed's gonna cut probably another five times in the next month, in the next year, assuming inflation doesn't skyrocket, which I don't think it will, given where rents are going. So, Fed's gonna cut another five times. The mortgage market is already starting to anticipate these cuts, right? So the mortgage rates have dropped over the last 6 months. We're now at a 6.17% mortgage rate. So these mortgage rates are already anticipating what's coming. I think it's reasonable to think that the mortgage rates will continue to drop. But again, I don't think we're going to see, like, I don't think we're going to see anything crazy. I think we'll see a 5.5 mortgage rate by the summer of next year. 5.5. Assuming the current trend in cuts and inflation. Maybe a little lower, maybe a little higher. To bring buyers back into the market in earnest, I think we got to see rates go below 5. I think we got to see them go into the 4s, and we need to see prices drop. That's why I think 2026 could be a big year for price drops if we see more of these sellers list their homes. What do you think about building an ADU in Los Angeles? Is a question from Planet Caitlin. What do you think about building an ADU in LA? Well, I think it could be a good idea, right? I mean, often the cost to build an ADU is low, right? If you already own the land, you already own the property, building an ADU is not that expensive. What I would recommend you do is you build a pro forma. So kind of first figure out, are you going to do short-term rentals or long-term rentals? If you do long-term rentals in Los Angeles, you got to understand your risks related to, tenants and tenants not paying. I have a friend actually in Tennessee. She owned some rentals in LA. She had tenants in there for a year that weren't paying. So just understand that the laws are not exactly stacked in your favor on long-term rentals in LA. But even so, do the pro forma and kind of show, what you think your long-term rental rent will be per month. Back out some vacancy, back out some operating costs, maybe attribute a part of the property taxes. Property taxes will probably go up if you do an ADU. Your insurance will go a bit higher. And then figure out what your income is going to be per year. And then divide that by your cost on the ADU. So let's throw some numbers out. 3,000 a month. Let's just say for long-term rent, maybe 2,500 a month for long-term rent. That'd be 30,000 in year rent. Let's say that's 20,000 a year in income. If there's no mortgage, could you build the ADU for 150? If so, you would have a pretty crazy return. You'd have like a 15% return. Another question: does it matter the cap rate if you're buying a first home and planning to exit at the top? Well, that's a nice idea. Buy your first home and exit at the top. Well, I think what's more relevant for buyers than cap rate is what I call the buy versus rent differential. So we have a metric here on ReVenture of buy versus rent differential under home prices and affordability. Buy versus rent differential. This is looking at how much does it cost to buy versus rent. In the areas in blue, it's pretty close. So like in Birmingham, Alabama, it's only 10% more expensive to buy than rent. In Tuscaloosa, Alabama, it's 23% cheaper to buy. Let's actually just take a look at this. Is Zillow going to work for me now, folks? Is Zillow going to work for me? No, it's Zillow still thinks I'm a bot. Very frustrating here. Would love to use Zillow for this video, but it thinks I'm a bot for some reason. Let's go to realtor.com and look in Tuscaloosa, Alabama at some houses. So in Tuscaloosa, which is where the University of Alabama is, folks, you can see some pretty cheap prices here. Look at this. Three bed, two bath, 1,400 square feet, 185,000. Now, is this livable? Is this house livable? I mean, it looks livable. Look at this, folks, 185 grand. I mean, that's a reasonable price. Mortgage would be estimated at 1,100 a month. 1,100 a month for a three bed, two bath. I mean, you could definitely rent it out for more than this, right? So I think I like markets like this. Tuscaloosa is actually a market I like a lot. It's 22% cheaper to buy. It's only 1% overvalued versus income, so it's not overvalued. Now, where's our price forecast? Our price forecast is flat. I would say Tuscaloosa is a market I would definitely look to buy if I'm an investor. If I have a remote job, and I could maybe live in my investment property for a while. Tuscaloosa is definitely an area I would look. I actually visited Tuscaloosa a couple years ago. There's some really nice neighborhoods. Again, look at the neighborhood view on Reventure app. Type in your city, type in your zip code. We have some big differences in forecast. There's some big differences in price depending on where you go in Tuscaloosa. There's also some big differences in cap rate. You have some areas with a 15% cap rate, some areas with a 6% cap rate. So definitely do that zip code level analysis for your area. Let's see. Caitlin is saying, yes, LA is very favorable to renters and building costs are a little higher, maybe 200,000. Yeah, if your building costs are 200,000, right, and you think you can get 20,000 a year in net income, that's a 10% yield. I think that'd be smart. You just got to make sure you understand the rules and regulations if you do long-term rental, if you do short-term rental. We had another request here. Zip code 95758. We're just doing channel member requests today, everyone. 95758. This is in Elk Grove, California. Now, Elk Grove, let's zoom out here. So this is south of Sacramento, right? Let's look at the cap rates here in Elk Grove. 95758. 957058. Is that the right zip code? 95758. Cap rate of 5.2%, which actually for California is not bad. 5.2%. Now, you could see this cap rate here in Elk Grove was 10% prior to the pandemic. 10% prior to the pandemic compared to the 10-year yield, you could say, wow, this was a no-brainer to buy an investment property in Elk Grove prior to the pandemic. You get a 9.7% cap. 10-year treasury yield was 1.9. Oh, no-brainer. Now it's not as much as a no-brainer. But the question is, what about values? If you're a regular buyer, values are down 3.7% the last 12 months. Values are down 3.7% the last 12 months. Our 12-month forecast is minus 3% as well. So a mini correction started to play out here in Elk Grove, minus 3.7. We think it's going to drop another 3%. You have some negotiating leverage if you're a buyer. There's more inventory, higher DOM, but don't expect a crash. I wouldn't start offering like 25% below asking price, but start going maybe 5 to 10% based on the current trajectory of the market here. In Elk Grove, California. Elk Grove, California. Let's see here. One thing I want to show you folks, actually want to announce a couple things. I talked about this in my last video, but we just ex celebrated our 2-year anniversary for Reventure App. So Reventure App's been the program I've been using throughout this video to help you guys understand what's going on in your market. It's an invaluable tool if you're an investor or a home buyer. And I had this idea three or 4 years ago to build this tool. And 2 years ago, we officially launched it. And since we launched it, everyone, we've had over 1 million unique users come to the Reventure app website. We just broke 1 million in the last month, which is really exciting. We also have 180,000 free users. So there's a free plan on Reventure app. 180,000 people have signed up for that, which is insane, folks. Like, it's crazy how much this app has grown. I haven't really talked too much about it. I kind of just prefer to focus on the data, but I just wanted to share some of those exciting tidbits with you guys, how much Reventure app is growing. We have some exciting plans to add even more data at the end of this year. We're going to add data on condo and single family values. We might even be looking at some data on mortgage defaults and foreclosures as well. So stay tuned for that in the next couple months. And one reason why you could definitely trust the data on Reventure app, in this market where everyone's telling you a different thing about where home prices are going to head, right? I have my own opinions about the overall market. Realtors have their own opinions. You go on social media, you read every headline, it says something different. Reventure app allows you to distill it down to the facts and truth about what's going on in your market with these forecasts. And what's really exciting is that we were testing our forecasts. And we found our forecast from 2024 to 2025, folks. Take a look at this. Our forecast had a 73% correlation coefficient. Basically, what was our forecast in April 2024 versus what was the actual home value growth through April 2025? Look at this correlation, folks. We nailed it from 2024 to 2025 on our forecast among the largest metros in America. The higher our forecast was in 2024, the more prices went up in 2025. The lower or more negative our forecast was in 2024, the more prices dropped. And so this is a forecast that we've actually found to be about 6 times better than Zillow. So on the left is Zillow's forecast over the same period, how it performed. On the right is how our forecast performed. And the reason I'm showing you all this data is so you can have faith in the data I'm showing you here on this channel. We've done a lot of work over the last 2 years to bring you a really objective and valuable forecast to help you all understand what's going on in your market. And so what I would encourage you guys to do right now is head to www.reventure.app and access your city and zip code. Type in your city and zip code and see the data in your market. Upgrade to a premium plan. So you can see that home price forecast by zip code. That's the first data point I would look at. If you're a buyer investor, look at that price forecast. Then also look at the overvaluation rate to get a sense of how fundamentally over or undervalued prices are. And then look at that cap rate. If you're an investor especially, take a look at that cap rate. Look at that long-term cap rate trend to see if it's a good or bad time to buy. You can see here in Ybor City, east of Tampa, there was a 29% cap rate in 2012. It was an unbelievable time to buy. We think prices are going to drop 7% in the next year, so the cap rate's going to be going up, but still, we're not yet at a level where it's a clear buy signal. So head to www.reventure.app right now, everyone. You can see, where is it, right here? I have it here in the screen below. www.reventure.app. Also, download the Reventure mobile app. We're now in the mobile app stores for Apple and Android, so if you prefer to use it on the app on your phone, you can download the app there and also upgrade to the premium plan to see the price forecast, the overvaluation rate, the cap rate for your area. Those are the data points that are going to help you as a buyer make a more informed decision at the end of 2025 and into 2026. And until next time, this is Nick from Reventure signing off.